Yes, and that would be the song You Don't Own Me, which I think is very apropos. So welcome back to the cabin. This is the Up North Podcast. I'm Kirk Bankstead along with Sarah Yacoub and our guest, President of Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin, Tanya Atkinson, and my friend Dr. Morgan Mandigo, a Harvard, Oxford, and John Hopkins trained obstetrician and gynecologist. So Dr. Mandigo, we spent the last segment talking about all the political threats to reproductive rights, which started with these crazy laws in Mississippi and Texas, but could ultimately end up in the overturning of Roe v. Wade by the uber-conservative United States Supreme Court. So now let's kind of flip the switch and talk about the actual health threats to women. So you've done a lot of research and have seen firsthand what it's like when women's reproductive rights are taken away. Can you tell us about how your work throughout Africa and the United States has informed you about what a post-Roe v. Wade America would look like, and then get into the statistics about how restricting women's reproductive rights actually hurts women's health in general?
Yeah, so the world where abortion is illegal is a pretty scary world to live in. A lot of countries in Africa and elsewhere in the world have complete abortion bans, no allocations for rape or incest or when a mother's life is in danger. And so Malawi is one such country. And the things that you see there are pretty horrific. So, you know, I think it's pretty irresponsible for politicians who never have to walk a day in my shoes or in my patient's shoes to be making these types of decisions without any idea of the real consequences. I can tell you pretty traumatizing stories. I took care of a 14-year-old. Who became pregnant, and the boy that impregnated her blew coop. And so she didn't have access to an abortion in Malawi, and she realized that she was going to have to quit school. She was lucky enough to have the opportunity to go to school and learn English, which was the key to her financial future. And she knew that she couldn't be a single mom and raise a baby and do that. And so the decision to carry out a pregnancy to term was essentially like dooming her to abject poverty, dooming her unborn child, right, is probably going to die in childhood of consequences of severe poverty and malnutrition. So she did what she thought was the responsible thing and took the matters into her own hands to induce an abortion illegally so that she could have a future and go to school. And we often talk and crassly joke about coat hanger abortions. And it's real. In Africa, they don't have coat hangers. They have twigs and sticks. And so this 14-year-old took some sticks and inserted them in her vagina with the goal of dilating her cervix manually so that she could pass the pregnancy. And instead she perforated her uterus and became massively infected, had an abdomen full of pus, and she became septic and died. So, that's the consequence of making a decision for your future to, you know, enable you to go to school. The other popular way of inducing an abortion is with medications. And so when legal medications aren't available, in many African countries, they turn to various herbal concoctions from, tribal medicine doctors. And I had a woman that took some kind of unknown concoction. And when she got to the hospital, she was in florid liver failure, which is a terrible way to die. Truly horrifying. She looked like, most people heard a lot of terrible things in the news a couple of years ago when there was that Ebola epidemic. So turns out when you're in florid liver failure, it looks a whole lot like you're dying of Ebola. She was hemorrhaging out of every orifice, bleeding from her eyes, her nose, her ears. She was yellow. She was completely altered, foaming at the mouth, and, you know, was in that condition for a few days before she finally died. So it's pretty graphic and horrifying. And the thing of it is that the alternative isn't much better. So for women that choose not to go that route of an unsafe abortion and choose instead to continue their pregnancy, so many, as Tanya said, so many of these women that are faced with a decision to have an abortion are already women who are at risk and who are at high risk in their pregnancies, whether they're teenagers, you know, women of poor socioeconomic status, minorities, or older women. And so I had another patient who was 12, who was raped, and she decided to continue her pregnancy. And so at 12 years old, you're at very high risk of all kinds of complications in pregnancy. And so when she got to her third trimester, she became eclamptic and came to our hospital seizing, and she had a stroke. And unfortunately, the stroke didn't kill her. And so she now is essentially a vegetable, lives in her small rural village, and she pretty much doesn't move from a straw mat on the floor. Her parents diaper her and bathe her and feed her, and that is her existence until she dies of complications of that stroke eventually.
So Morgan, let me cut you in. Let me cut you off for a second. So you just told three absolutely horrific stories that for all intents and purposes could happen in the United States if Roe v. Wade is overturned. And I want to tell our audience right now, it's not like I brought, you know, I brought this doctor on the show to just tell some ridiculously horrible stories. I think it is important that everybody hears this graphic stuff because you know what? We hear these guys standing in front of Planned Parenthood clinics showing crazy pictures of body parts because of what abortions, you know, the crazy pictures, and they are scaring women who are just trying to get reproductive health care. And so, you know, to a certain degree, this is the reality. And this is a reality. This is more of a reality than these crazy people standing in front of Planned Parenthood clinics protesting. So yeah, I apologize to our audience if some of this is graphic, but I think it's worth talking about. Sarah, do you have a question for?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we could have this show for a few hours with the wealth of information. Tanya, there are these narratives that women use abortion for, you know, birth control every month, and that, you know, women wait till their second and third trimester because it's fun, and then suddenly decide, I'm going to go kill a baby today. Can you share with our listeners your experience with, or, you know, Dr. Mendigo, feel free to jump in as well, just, you know, the situations that you see when women and their families are up against these really painful, deeply personal decisions?
Well, and Sarah, what you said is exactly right. You know, people have a lot of, you know, we know that 80% of people want abortion to remain safe and legal, and we know that people have a lot of complicated feelings around abortion. What is, you know, something we all can agree on, that deciding whether or not to have a child is one of the most potentially life-changing decisions somebody can make, and that it's critical that people be able to make those decisions, be trusted to make those decisions on their own or with their family or whoever else they decide to have involved in making that decision. And every single one of your listeners, almost every single one of your listeners has, you know, either been in a situation where they are making a decision about whether or not to have a child, or they know somebody that's been in a situation about whether or not to have a child. And every single one of their circumstances is different. And so for every single patient that walks through our door, every single person is unique. Every single person has their own story. Every single person has their own family and their own considerations. So every single person is an individual. And so there is no, like, there's no generalization. You know, you do hear those narratives sometimes. There is no generalization. These are people, these are families making decisions that are deeply personal and very private, and they need access to this very, very basic healthcare.
Yeah, I would just add that the patients that I've taken care of that present later are often the ones that have the most traumatic decisions. You know, as Tanya was saying, a lot of times these are the women that desperately were trying to get pregnant, and they never in a million years thought that they would be that they would ever consider an abortion. But typically, between 18 and 20 weeks is when women get their ultrasound that gives them the first glance at, you know, fingers and toes and kidneys and heart and lungs and all of the development. So that's oftentimes the first time that you can appreciate that there is a congenital anomaly. And some of them can be pretty severe, and, you know, not compatible with life, or, you know, lend a child to have a lot of suffering before inevitably dying, but you could continue a pregnancy with those. And so here are these women that all they ever wanted was this pregnancy and this child. And now, you know, if they don't have the opportunity to have those abortions, you know, at 18 to 20 weeks, they have to look at themselves in the mirror every day with a pregnancy that is traumatizing, that they know, you know, a baby that won't have the life that they were hoping for.
So let me jump in, Dr. Mandigo. So can you actually put a realistic story to this? We were talking about your experiences last night, and you said that there you had to tell a woman that her baby didn't have a brain or something, right? And yet she still had to carry it to term. Can you go through that story so that we can actually visualize what a woman has to go through if a baby is going to be born dead?
Yeah. So this woman, you know, found out at her 18-week ultrasound that her baby was anencephalic, meaning there was no brain. So the head is kind of truncated, you know, at the eyebrows, and there is some brain stem activity. So you can have babies that are actually born without a brain. So, and they can, sometimes they die immediately, and just depending on how much brainstem function there is, sometimes they can live for a while without a brain and looking severely disfigured and deformed. So you can imagine how traumatizing that would be for somebody who, in this case, she was an infertility patient. She tried for 5 years. She spent her life savings doing IVF. And now to say, well, you have to carry this baby for five more months of looking in the mirror and looking at your belly and knowing that you're carrying a baby without a brain is horrifying.
Well, okay. You know, we as parents, we want to make decisions for our kids. So we hear about, you know, parents being wanting input on schools, you know, to what our kids eat, to how we parent, and to be denied the right to give your unborn baby a humane end and to make that decision. It removes the dignity of being a mother, of being a parent. It's so shocking. I can't believe we have to still talk about this.
So let's talk about, and this question is going to go to Tanya. We just talked about the difference between, like, you know, the 15 weeks of you can't actually have, and sorry, Dr. Mandigo, you're way better at this, but the 15 weeks that you can't actually see what's wrong with a potential fetus between then 15 to 24 or weeks is kind of the only time you can see it. This Mississippi law says you can't have an abortion after 15 weeks. And that's the reason why it would overturn Roe v. Wade, because Roe v. Wade gives a longer time period. I think this is the last question for Tanya. Why is this, from a public policy's perspective, we've talked about the psychological and the clinical, why is this wrong from a public policy perspective?
Well, again, you know, the Mississippi law, if you know, could overturn Roe. So in Wisconsin, that means that abortion could immediately become a crime. So that's a piece of it. And secondly, from a public policy perspective, as you're talking about time limits and, you know, all of those things, you know, what's at the heart of all of this is that people are making deeply personal decisions, and they should be able to make the healthcare decisions that they need to make. And that's really what's fundamental here, is people being able to make their own healthcare decisions. The timelines, all of those things are all, again, simply barriers to people accessing very, very basic healthcare that is critical to their health, to their families, to their future.
Dr. Mandigo.
Yeah, I agree. The other aspect of it is that when there's no contingency for you know, a mother's life, or, you know, rape or incest, like in the situation of Texas, you know, we're neglecting all of those pregnancies that are non-viable pregnancies. Tanya talked about that earlier, like ectopic pregnancies that you know, wouldn't be a viable fetus anyway, and are you know, jeopardizing the mother's life. And so in the case of the Texas law in particular, there's no way that a physician can even terminate a non-viable pregnancy to save a woman's life.
Okay. And with that, we are going to take our final break. Sorry to cut you off, birthday boy. We're going to wrap up our show in just a moment.